And this is Ozarks at Large for the first day of November 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for tuning in. A new Fayetteville Water Quality Company, started up by two University of Arkansas environmental engineers, will next month test its new invention on oil-contaminated saltwater oyster beds along the Louisiana coast. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this story.
The company is called Blue and Green, one word, and was co-founded in 2006 by ecological engineering professor Scott Osborne and Marty Matlock. Blue and Green is a project of virtual incubation company that's a technology venture development firm also in Fayetteville. After the British Petroleum's Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico leaked an estimated 200 million gallons of crude oil, Blue and Green saw an opportunity both to help clean polluted coastal zones and expand their product line. Last summer, Blue and Green applied for and received a $174,000 grant through the Rapid Response Program at the National Science Foundation Center to deploy its innovative S-DOX technology that replenishes dissolved oxygen in polluted freshwater lakes and streams. Scott Osborne, Blue and Green's chief operating officer, is also associate professor of biological and agricultural engineering on the U of A campus.
The fact that you have oil spilled into the Gulf, it's organic matter that feeds bacteria. The bacteria that consume the oil, which is good, also consume oxygen, which is not good. There's a hypoxia problem that's been there for a long time in the Gulf, and this has had the potential to exacerbate that.
Hypoxia occurs when oxygen concentrations fall below the level necessary to sustain aquatic life. Pollutants and excess fertilizers flowing into the Gulf of Mexico for years have created chronic hypoxic zones, and the oil spill has made matters worse.
What we focused on was the shallow areas, the marshes, the estuaries, the bays where oysters are grown, and that's usually in a couple of feet of water. So the oil that washes up in there is very difficult to remove using a physical process because you have grasses, you can't skim it, it's very difficult to get to. And so the best way to remove that oil would be through bioremediation, which would just be the natural bacteria breaking the oil down, consuming it, but that's also going to consume oxygen. And the key concern of the locals was the economy revolving around the oysters.
The Gulf Coast produces about 70% of all U.S. oysters, according to the industry website. In Louisiana, where Blue and Green intends to test its S-DOX system, typically produces about half that harvest, but it was shut down last spring. Slightly over half of Louisiana's oyster harvesting zones reopened in September. One of those zones in Lafourche Parish is where S-DOX technology will be tested.
Oyster beds are very environmentally sensitive. They require a higher concentration of oxygen in the water than most of the other aquatic life there. And so the purpose of the project was to take our technology, deploy it in these shallow, warm waters of the Gulf where the oyster beds are, and look at adding dissolved oxygen there so that we could do it, see how large of an area we could cover, how big of a unit you would need later on. To deploy, you know, for the full scale, how effective was it going to be? What were the costs going to be? And it looked like the most effective way to get to those very difficult to reach oyster beds to try to help them, you know, not just survive but recover, become healthy, so that you have proper reproduction and growth for next year's season, the next year's season, the season beyond that.
That extra oxygen boost will help microbes to rapidly break down the hydrocarbons from the oil spill, allowing oyster beds to recover more quickly. Blue and Green supersaturated dissolved oxygen S-DOX system is different from traditional dissolved oxygen delivery methods, Osborne said. Injected oxygen gas bubbles tend to rise to the surface, then dissipate. Blue and Green pre-dissolves oxygen gas into a stream of water inside a pressurized saturation tank, creating a supersaturated concentrate, which is released back into the water being treated. It was designed specifically for fresh water, but the grant is providing financing to Blue and Green engineers to retrofit for salt water.
So The oyster beds need a concentration of oxygen, about 5 milligrams of oxygen per liter of water. And so what our system does, it pulls in the water, dissolves it to about 300 milligrams of dissolved oxygen per liter of water, injects that water back out and mixes it broadly, because with no bubbles, we're mixing one liquid with another liquid. So the proposal was to take our existing technology, which we're using for many different applications, and modify it so that, one, it could work in salt water. Salt water is more corrosive. You have to redesign some things because of that. And tailor, redo the engineering part of the design, and then have a prototype unit manufactured to work specifically for that region. And so what we've done is to we've redesigned it. We've sent out, you know, got the bids and all that stuff, and then sent it out. And it's currently being manufactured, and it should be, I think it's scheduled for completion sometime, actually next week or the week after. And then we're planning, and we're working with the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality to identify where are the key areas that either A, need help right now, or B, would be good deployment sites to test this technology as problems may reemerge as the due to the seasonal changes and things like that.
So plumes of freshly oxygenated water will be targeted to specific locations in Gulf coastal oyster estuaries.
The grant is to build the unit, take it down there, have three test sites, and then treat each test site for 2 weeks. And look at, you know, how broad of a distribution of dissolved oxygen do we get? What are the details of how do you install this thing? Do you have to put it on a barge? Can you put it on the land? Do you have to build some special structure? You know, how's the best way to get power to it? What kind of oxygen do you need to use? You know, all these details to make it work. We need this as part of it for us, you know, the engineering and technical team to figure out. And then that data will be transferable to, I mean, the Gulf of Mexico is not the only oyster beds in the country that have low dissolved oxygen problems. You've got the same problems in Puget Sound, Chesapeake. You know, you've got with aquatic life for fisheries. You know, all over the country. And so this data will be transferable to how do we create systems to help address those problems as well.
Results from testing will be issued by the end of the year. Blue and Green was awarded a patent for their S-Doc system in 2008 and are applying for others worldwide. They've been manufacturing and selling units around the region to industry and municipalities.
The first unit we sold was here in Fayetteville to the city of Fayetteville for the Nolan Wastewater Treatment Plant. So all of the water that goes through there gets oxygenated before it goes out into the system, into the watershed with our system. We've sold another system to a golf course pond up in Seattle, Washington area to try to get a handle on algae and the nutrients in their golf course pond, which they also use to irrigate the greens and et cetera. We've got a unit that we just finished installing in Lake Thunderbird over in Oklahoma, and that's for adding oxygen to help that lake system recover, and it's the drinking water source for Norman and several other cities around Oklahoma City there. And we're also next month installing a system down at the Tech Park, the U of A Tech Park, where they were able to get a grant to install a system in their retention detention pond, which takes the parking lot runoff. And so we're oxygenating that water.
Last month, the company received the 2010 Water Environment Award for its S-Dox supersaturated dissolved oxygen system. The Water Environment Federation is an international not-for-profit technical and educational water quality organization. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information, you can visit the website blueandgreen.com. That's altogether blueingreen.com. Later on this edition of Ozarks at Large, you think running an election is easy? Just print ballots, then count them? Modern elections mean hundreds of different ballots with races this midterm election from U.S. Senate all the way down to constable. Later on Ozarks, talking election prep with Washington County Election Commissioner John Logan Burrow. Christopher Spencer from the website Ozarks Unbound will join me for this week's edition of Unlicensed Opinion. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large. The Bella Vista Village Property Owners Association is collecting non-perishable food items beginning today for Thanksgiving baskets for local families in need. Items will be collected through the 17th of this month, and the baskets will be delivered the week of Thanksgiving to Bella Vista families. Drop-off sites have been established at Reardon Hall and the Branchwood Recreation Center. For more information, or if you'd like a list of requested non-perishable canned and dry items, you can call the Outreach Department in Bella Vista at 855-8170. And First Security Bank is holding a coat drive to benefit the Boys and Girls Club of Northwest Arkansas and Peace at Home Family Shelter. Area residents are encouraged to donate coats at any Northwest First Security location now through the end of 2010. Sizes from newborn to 3XL in female and male coats are needed. For more information, fsbank.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Support for Ozarks at Large
on Veterans
comes
Day,
from Walton Arts Center and the 10x10 Art Series.
We take a moment to stop and honor those who've defended our country over the years.
Friday, November 5th.
Saturday, a local nonprofit
this modern dance
is celebrating
a Korean
Trey
War
McIntyre's
veteran
latest work,
Fixing Up His Home
Sweet
in Gentry.
Love,
Ozarks
featuring music by
Antoinette
Grajeda, has more on this story.
And Felix Mendelson.
Rebuilding Together of Northwest Arkansas is a nonprofit organization that helps preserve and revitalize homes for those who are not physically or financially able to do the work themselves.
Promoting good health
Choice
to individuals
Hotels International
and
is a national sponsor for Rebuilding Together,
classes,
and this year
programs,
they have selected
tennis,
Northwest Arkansas
Pilates,
as the location
more.
Of one of their projects. Korean War veteran Bart Nelson, someone Jan Skopesic, executive director of the Northwest Arkansas chapter, describes as an awesome individual,
throughout the
will be the beneficiary
of the
November
of
6th project.
But any daytime
Bart
rainfall less than a tenth of an inch. Highs this afternoon, lower 70s. Tonight, 70% chance of showers, possibly
very dear friend of
up to a half inch of rainfall could accumulate in parts of the listening area tonight. Lows
benefit,
from the mid-40s in northwest Arkansas tonight to lower 50s
now,
for the Arkansas River Valley.
And
for tomorrow,
in the crack.
Kind of two different forecasts.
And
40%
so
chance of rain in the morning
in
northwest Arkansas,
in
then
Rogers
gradually clearing tomorrow afternoon with highs around 60. For the Arkansas River Valley, a 60% chance of rain pretty much the entire day. Highs tomorrow for the Arkansas River Valley also around 60. Wednesday's forecast, mostly sunny, highs near 65. Veterans Memorial 5K race and fundraiser is scheduled for Saturday, November 13th, beginning at 8 that morning.
Throughout the year,
the
nonprofit organization helps
keep
low-income homeowners safe, warm, and dry.
All proceeds from the event will go for the purchase and clearing of land for the expansion of Fayetteville National Cemetery. Information about registration for the race, which takes place November 13th, is rncic.com.
Make their home.
And the singing group Harmonia, a 15-woman choral group from Fayetteville, will have a CD release party Wednesday evening, November 10th, at the Whole Earth Organic Lounge in downtown Fayetteville. The lounge is at 40
Although volunteers from Arkansas, as well as Oklahoma, Texas, and Missouri are scheduled to help with this weekend's project, work has already begun on the property in Gentry. Skopesic explains that some of the work has to be completed by licensed professionals. PHG Construction from Little Rock, for example, began helping out a few weeks ago.
They brought a crew up here, and they are dealing with...
Talk of the Nation is next on KUAF, another all-new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon on Election Day. Have a great Monday.
We will have, all of the plumbing has been replaced in the house. The electrical will be done the end of this week. We have new cabinets and all new fixtures coming into the bathroom, new cabinets in the kitchen, new tile floor, and we refinished his wood floors. And then when the the windows are being replaced, and then the volunteers on that actual work day are going to go through inside the house, paint the entire interior, and we'll be cleaning up all the landscaping outside.
As a nonprofit, Rebuilding Together of Northwest Arkansas sometimes receives donated materials. However, Skopesic explains that she knows with the shape of the economy, suppliers are struggling just like everyone else.
We work with our suppliers and our tradesmen. In the current economic situation, we have to recognize that they're not truly in a position to be able to do as much as they've done in the past. And so, as I've said to each of them, we recognize where you are. We appreciate your being involved, and we want to partner with you. Very often they will do discounts, and where possible, they will donate material.
The executive director says anyone who wants to help can contact the office and get involved, because they can never have too many volunteers. She adds that Saturday's event will be a day of celebration. She says not only is it a day to celebrate veterans, but also celebrate the community coming together.
It's an opportunity for individuals to return to something that some of us grew up with, and it's called family helping family, community helping community. Back before our families were so fractured, if you needed help, if there was a new, think back to the old barn raising, and think back to when someone was sick, family gathered, food was brought, assistance was there for whoever might need it. And with our families being so fractured today, it's one of the things that our volunteers have spoken to, is it's given them a chance when they can't help their family at home to certainly come together and be able to help someone within their community who doesn't have the ability to be able to help themselves. Their funds, whatever they might be, are devoted to going through and attempting to put food on the table, to take care of medical bills, to clothe themselves, and very often there's not a whole lot of money left over.
More information is available at 479-725-2488 or rebuildingtogethernwa.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It is the month of November, November 1st, 2010. Becca Bacon-Martin, the editor of What's Up, winces at the fact that it's November, but nevertheless, Becca, it is a new month.
How did this happen? And I have a birthday this month, and we're not going to discuss that either. Tonight, Schola Cantorum in concert.
Walton Arts Center.
7:30. If you've never heard Schola Cantorum perform, it's the university ultra, ultra, ultra honors choir.
And to hear them in Baum Walker, I mean, a place that's built for this kind of music, really great.
7:30, tickets are, guess?
Inexpensive.
$5.
That's inexpensive.
That's almost free. 443-5600. Also tonight, A Conversation with Ben, featuring Alan J. Pruitt as Benjamin Franklin. Tonight at 7:30 at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale, part of their Serendipity series. Tickets are $8 for children and $10 for adults.
That's a perfect election eve sort of thing.
Isn't
to do.
It?
Yeah.
If you missed the John Stewart rally to restore sanity, you can go have a conversation with Ben. 751-5441.
All right. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
You got you some legs, baby, just won't quit. You got you a pretty boy and it looks pretty.
Singer-songwriter Lyle Lovett was born on this date in 1957. An only child, Lovett grew up on his family's horse ranch in Klein, Texas, a small Houston suburb named after his grandfather. In 1982, Lovett graduated from Texas A&M University with degrees in German and journalism. While in college, Lovett started writing his own music and playing in coffee houses. In the early 80s, after dabbling in the European music scene, Lovett returned to the United States. He signed with a label in 1986 and released his self-titled debut album later that year. Five singles from that album made it onto the country charts. He continued to experiment in jazz, folk, and pop within the country framework. Pontiac, Lovett's second album, showcased this sound and eventually went gold. Though mainstream recognition has eluded him, Lovett has earned a cult following around the world with a modern, eccentric sound coupled with literate, witty lyrics. In 1989, he won a Grammy for Best Male Vocalist for the album Lyle Lovett and His Large Band. He won a second Grammy for his 1993 duet with Al Green, Funny How Time Slips Away, and a third for 1994's Blues for Dixie, recorded as a tribute to Texas swing pioneer Bob Wills. Lovett relocated to Los Angeles, and in 1994, he released I Love Everybody, which was only a mild success. 2 years later, Lovett released The Road to Ensenada, which debuted at number 4 on the country charts. The musician has continued releasing albums. His most recent, Natural Forces, debuted in 2009.
And you'll spend the night like you were spending a dime. That's just a crash.
French Jesuit priest Father Jacques Gravier celebrated the first Catholic Mass in Arkansas on this date in 1700. The Mass occurred along the Mississippi River at a Quapaw Indian village 20 years before France founded the permanent settlement of Arkansas Post. Michelangelo's paintings on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel were first exhibited to the public on this date in 1512. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It's Monday, and it's the return of Unlicensed Opinion with Christopher Spencer, who is the publisher and owner of OzarksUnbound.com. Welcome back, Christopher.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Kyle. How are you?
I'm fine. Our guest this Monday, the day before election, John Logan Burrow, who is Election Commissioner of Washington County. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
Florists have Mother's Day and Valentine's Day. Bartenders have St. Patrick's Day. Boy, tomorrow's a big day for election commissioners, isn't it?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, we start preparing for this election day literally years in advance of any general election. We're already working towards what we know are coming as huge elections in Northwest Arkansas. And God help us, we're prepared for tomorrow to be a big one.
What has to happen in the last hours, or hopefully nothing has to happen between now and tomorrow morning at 7:30?
Well, even as we speak, this Monday, the 56 election polling place supervisors are arriving at the courthouse to pick up our workstation to pick up the equipment that they will need to conduct tomorrow's election. And the logistics of deploying an election clear across Washington County are really formidable. We're very lucky we've got the people to run that operation for us, as skilled as they are, as highly trained as they are, as devoted to the job as they are.
Because you have to be from Winslow to the edge of Springdale and everywhere in between.
Oh, we're in Cincinnati. We're in Nob Hill. It's just a really interesting geography of elections in Washington County. We have a polling place in Strickler. We have a polling place in Viney Grove. And one of the things you really do get to love is the social warp and woof of the fabric of a county like Washington County that's been naming its places for 150 years, and you just truly do relish the sound of the name Cincinnati. It's really fun to be to carry those ballot boxes in and stack them up there to be counted, and think about how long they've been voting in that place.
And Cincinnati, up in the north western part of the county, is that right?
Well, it's out by the Oklahoma border.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. How long does it take someone to come in? So 7:30 when the polls close, how long does it take to bring that into Fayetteville to have it counted?
Those are the ones that do get to the courthouse pretty much at the end of the line. But if there are folks waiting to vote, they are allowed to vote if they get there before the 7:30 deadline. And then it takes a little bit of a while to shut down a polling place these days. We have to print out the Ivotronic touchscreen machine's results and post those on the wall before we shut down the polling place. And then the paraphernalia of the election itself has to be loaded up. And there's quite a bit of it, as a matter of fact. So we give our people, well, it takes a considerable amount of time for folks in the outlying regions of the county to get their polling place stuff to us.
Could take an hour, maybe, something like that?
Yeah, it's not uncommon for us to, if polls close at 7:30 and they get finish with the process of shutting it down and packing it up and loading it up, for them to roll into the courthouse with their stuff at 9 o'clock.
Well, and I ask that because you and I have sat across from each other there in the courtroom many a time as I have stood there with other reporters eagerly begging and waiting for results. And yes. We always note when maybe Cincinnati's coming in or one of the more extreme areas there is coming in. And you tend to now release some early results at the beginning and then later release full results, right?
Right. What we will do is, and this is a customary practice for us, is on election day, as soon as the process of qualifying the absentee ballots is completed, each envelope with an absentee ballot in it has to be opened and the not the ballot itself, but the accompanying materials have to be examined by a group of people who are specially charged with this duty to qualify that ballot for that voter to be counted. Once that process is completed, then we proceed to start counting the early and absentee ballots, and we hope to be at work with that by mid to late afternoon. It's always been our goal to get those ballots completely counted before the actual polling places close out in the field. We do not release that information until 8 o'clock at night. And it gives us some information we can give to an eagerly awaiting public because people are really interested in knowing how the election is going. But we don't release that information until we know the polls are closed and the last voter has probably voted. We consider it to be sensitive information that might influence someone's decision about how they might vote or decide not to vote at all. But that's not something we can be responsible for, the decisions being made out in the polling places. The law will not allow us to release that information until the polls are closed. But it's also been a customary practice for us to proceed right through the whole election and get it all counted and then release the total numbers that we have at the end of the day.
Between 7:30 a.m. and 7:30 p.m. on an election day, do you have like a red emergency phone waiting to hear if something has gone wrong or there's a dispute somewhere?
Every polling place has a telephone connection to us, and we communicate with them steadily. There's also a constant flow of communications back and forth from polling places to the county clerk's office, because we have a tremendously mobile population in Washington County, and voters very often don't keep their polling place information current with their address at the courthouse, and so they go vote where they once upon a time voted, but that's not their polling place any longer, and we have to ascertain what their voting status is, and that's done over the telephone from the polling place to the county clerk's office. And of course, we do have troubleshooting going on all day long with the election commission staff with respect to our voting equipment and various different problems that do crop up as the day goes along.
Voting used to be easier. I remember going with my mom to the Lakeview City Hall. You had one day, you had this time, you voted on paper, you put it in the box. Now, I can vote a couple of weeks early. There are multiple places to vote early. Does this make things more difficult?
Well, it certainly is more complex for us to organize the election. We now have 56 polling places in Washington County on election day. We have 128 different precincts in Washington County, upwards of 50 or so different ballots for Washington County. We'll have 2,000 voters accredited at any given polling place. There's 102,000 registered voters in Washington County, and we have to technically be prepared for all 102,000 of them to show up to vote. Mm-hmm. So it's become more complex in this sense that it's not any longer just your neighborhood a gathering place where we can put in a polling place, because we have to be able to accommodate larger numbers of voters than your traditional polling place was 30 or 40 years ago. We're moving in a direction towards even larger voting centers so that larger numbers of people can come to a place that's suitable for a large number of people to be voting at, as opposed to smaller places with limited parking and interior spaces where the lines may stretch out the door into inclement weather. And so we're having to accommodate a growing voting population that does complicate our problem.
And then, of course, there are some places that just don't want to be a polling place.
There are a lot of places that simply it's not convenient for them to give up their parking and their interior spaces and for any given Tuesday of the year there can be an election. Next year's an off-year election. We're looking at six or seven elections we're expecting to be having.
At one point, you were using schools, for example, for polling places. Right now, are there still schools?
Yeah, we have at least one polling place that's still in a school. But schools, once upon a time, were a great neighborhood gathering place for voters to come and vote. And I've seen, when I was in grade school, I remember people coming to Rogers Elementary School in Fort Smith to vote. But the ability of a school to accommodate hundreds of voters waiting in line to vote has really diminished. And the parking is not what it needs to be for a polling place. The area inside the school itself is really, today schools are really a cramped area. They're using every available square inch of the school for educational purposes. And at one point we were in a large space which was both a gymnasium and a dining area. Cafeteria, and so between those two operations of the school, voting was really kind of difficult. Mm-hmm. So it just became obvious that we needed to find spaces that were more convenient for voting to take place in, and so that's been a transition. We've also had fire stations are no longer really a good place for us to be because they're large open spaces that the wind howls through whenever they open all those doors, and we've got election materials that need to be stay right where they
not
are.
Not blown off the table, huh?
Exactly. So for various reasons, the type of building, the type of structure or facility for voting to go on in is becoming harder to find, and we're having to consolidate more voters into them as the population grows in Washington County. But we're very, very fortunate that the community centers and the churches have been made available to us, readily available with no compensation whatsoever for them. We're very lucky to have the folks who support us the way they do.
There was talk, at least in the past two elections, I believe, of opening an early voting place on the University of Arkansas campus. And there was, I know you discussed this last time, it ended up not happening, and I wonder if you can explain how that decision occurred.
Well, first of all, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do to establish an off-site early voting place. It has to meet an awful lot of requirements that we have that are peculiar just to voting. For one thing, it has to be available all day long for the voting to take place in. There has to be adequate parking, handicap accessible, internet access. And we're running into lots of criteria here that not every facility can meet. The university campus offering of a location would be difficult, if not impossible, for voters from the outlying areas of the county to access that because of parking problems on the campus. And so the rationale for voting against it, which one member of the commission did, was largely based on that criteria, which was difficult for the host to meet. And this is one thing that requires a unanimous vote of the commission. The only thing I know in government that requires an absolute unanimous vote to proceed with is off-site early voting locations, and it did not get the unanimous vote.
Wasn't there a rental cost associated with it, too?
No, I don't remember we ever being asked to pay a rental cost, but the issues of parking for our staff and the accessibility of it for non-campus voters were pretty formidable obstacles for establishing one at that. And then, of course, it was you can see from Old Main, you can look out and see the courthouse, a mile distant, and it's difficult to rationalize the inability of folks who are there all day long from being able to walk.
It's not
the
that far away, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. It's easy to be cynical in these times. as it has been at other times. People can say, I'm not going to vote. The candidates don't listen to me. They represent special interests and not me. But on election day, you have the chance to go to the ballot box. Here is your chance. What would you say to someone? Why vote?
I would remind them of times when people have come up to me in the days after an election and say they just could not ever get over the fact that for some reason they didn't go and vote, and it was a tie vote. If they had only showed up to vote, the thing would have gone the other way. Or it is a very, very narrow margin of decision. Two or three votes determine the outcome of an election. And they say to me, I can't believe I didn't go and vote that day. So it's in my experience, everybody that's out there that's trying to decide whether their vote's going to count or not really needs to remember it can come right down to your vote, how this election turns out. It is the system that we have that determines who will have power to make our decisions, to spend our money and make our laws. It is an extraordinarily important thing. It actually determines the legitimacy of the government itself. And you have to take that deeply seriously. It is the one thing that keeps us from having the terrible chaos and tragedy that other societies in the world take for granted that they're going to have to endure and pay the price for. We get to decide with our votes what the future of our politics is and our government is. And it may not be perfect. It may not be the thing that really satisfies people. But as Winston Churchill says, it's better than every other one.
John Logan Burrow is election commissioner for Washington County. If you'd like to hear more from our conversation, including an explanation of how each Arkansas County's election commission is formed and why a secret ballot a few years ago in Washington County wasn't secret at all, you can go to our webpage, OzarksAtLarge.com. And ahead on Ozarks at Large, Christopher Spencer from the website Ozarks Unbound, and I will have the second part of our weekly visit, our plugs and our predictions. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large, and this is the second portion of our unlicensed opinion. Christopher Spencer, the owner and publisher of OzarksUnbound.com. This is the segment that we call Plug or Predict.
Yes, indeed. The time when we choose something that we want to advocate or make some sort of prediction. We both made predictions at this point.
Yes.
And what do you have?
I am going to plug and predict.
You're always changing the rules.
I know. Well, it's my show.
Oh, that's true.
Well, here is the plug is barely a plug. My plug is vote.
Okay.
I just can't stand people who say
that's more of a PSA. We'll say.
I guess it is. I love voting. Things don't always go your way, but I do. It's trite to say, but I think you give up your ability to complain if you don't vote. Just vote. So that's my plug. My predict is that Boone County is going to have its largest turnout in decades. There's a wet-dry issue on Boone County that has generated, I don't know if you read the Harrison Daily paper.
Daily. I read it.
Oh, do you really?
No.
Oh, okay. I do. I get it online. And this has been a particularly nasty issue-oriented session in Boone County, whether to allow the legal sale of alcohol. It's been more than 30% of registered voters have early voted in Boone County, and it's going to be interesting. Marion County.
That's a massive turnout.
It is. That, I mean, there are elections where if 30% go to the ballot box, that kind of is eyebrow raising. Marion County, which is to the east of Boone County and had been dry since Prohibition, just a few years ago went wet. Carroll County on the west, Missouri to the north, all wet. There is speculation that Harrison and Boone County loses out on revenue by being this island of dry. But there are people that said, you know, if you need liquor, you can go to these other counties and buy your package of liquor and drive back. I'm anxious to see how this goes. I think it's going to be a huge turnout.
I'm going to actually plug something. Last year, you may recall, Kyle, we at Ozarks and Bound put together a project called Ballot Bucks, where we were taking some local candidates and we listed all the campaign contributions that they received. This is actually for the primary. Mm-hmm. So we've reloaded Ballot Bucks with some of the general election races. We've got Circuit Court race, District 7, between Steve Zaga and Joanne Taylor. Mm-hmm. And we've got Eva Madison versus Tony Peroni.
Yes.
In the Washington County JP race, as well as the Fayetteville city races. And so, it's not a commercial enterprise. And if people want to check that out, that would be great. You can also check out the endorsements that Ozarks and Mount is making on the website. And everybody, again, turn out for the election. It's going to be great.
Do you vote on Election Day or do you early vote?
I vote on Election Day in big races because I love the magic.
I do, too. I love standing in line. I love listening to the conversations. I just feel connected to the country if I'm in line to vote. It sounds like a trite or silly thing to say, but
I even like the people outside the election who are waving their signs and trying to get my vote at the very last minute,
right,
while obeying, you know, the electioneering laws and regulations.
I admire people who are engaged.
Mm-hmm.
No matter whether it's something that I may or may not agree with, I'm like you. I love seeing those people that are, because those are volunteers. Those mm-hmm. are people that have probably taken a vacation day to go out and campaign for their candidate. And I think if there was more of that, we'd probably, I think, be better off. I don't know. Maybe that's a simplistic view.
I think it makes the whole process stronger and better.
Christopher, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Christopher Spencer is the owner and the editor of the website Ozarks Unbound. His visits to Ozarks at Large are a regular Monday feature.
On the next Fresh Air.
I've been over this 100 times about my anger at my father for walking out on us, my mother's suicide when I was 17, my need to save people as a result.
Gabriel Byrne is back for a third season of HBO's In Treatment with new patients and a new therapist. We talk with writers Dan Futterman and Anya Epstein. Join us.
And the University of Arkansas Fort Smith is bringing the touring production of Fiddler on the Roof to Fort Smith tomorrow night at 7:30 in the Arkansas Best Corporation Performing Arts Center at the Fort Smith Convention Center. For cost, tickets, or more information, uafortsmith.edu. And the music department at Northwest Arkansas Community College will host a performance by the Ozark Mountains British Brass Band Sunday afternoon at 3 in White Auditorium. The concert is titled In Honor of Veterans and will feature a variety of patriotic music, including Hymn to the Fallen, Armed Forces Salute, America the Beautiful, and of course, some John Philip Sousa marches. Children under 12 are free. Tickets will be available at the door Sunday. For more information, 855-0591. Support for Ozarks at Large comes from Walton Art Center and the 10x10 Artist Series, presenting the dance troupe Trey McIntyre Project Friday, November 5th. That's this Friday. This modern dance company will perform Trey McIntyre's latest work, Wild Sweet Love, featuring music by Queen, Lou Reed, Roberta Flack, and Felix Mendelssohn. Tickets and more information about the 10x10 Art Series now available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. And the Fayetteville Athletic Club, promoting good health to individuals and families of all ages with personal training, group classes, after-school programs, tennis, Pilates, and more. FAYAC.com or 587-0500 for more information. The updated forecast, still a 20% chance of showers throughout the KUAF listening area for the rest of this afternoon, but any daytime rainfall less than a tenth of an inch. Highs this afternoon, lower 70s. Tonight, 70% chance of showers, possibly a thunderstorm. Up to a half inch of rainfall could accumulate in parts of the listening area tonight. Lows from the mid-40s in northwest Arkansas tonight to lower 50s for the Arkansas River Valley. And for tomorrow, kind of two different forecasts. 40% chance of rain in the morning in northwest Arkansas, then gradually clearing tomorrow afternoon with highs around 60. For the Arkansas River Valley, a 60% chance of rain pretty much the entire day. Highs tomorrow for the Arkansas River Valley also around 60. Wednesday's forecast, mostly sunny, highs near 65. Veterans Memorial 5K race and fundraiser is scheduled for Saturday, November 13th, beginning at 8 that morning. The race will begin at the Fayetteville National Cemetery gates. Fee for the entry is $25. All proceeds from the event will go for the purchase and clearing of land for the expansion of Fayetteville National Cemetery. Information about registration for the race, and it takes place November 13th, is rncic.com. And the singing group Harmonia, a 15-woman choral group from Fayetteville, will have a CD release party Wednesday evening, November 10th, at the Whole Earth Organic Lounge in downtown Fayetteville. The lounge is at 40 East Center Street near the Fayetteville Square. The concert on the 10th begins at 7 p.m. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Gravette. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for tuning in. Talk of the Nation is next on KUAF, another all-new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon on Election Day. Have a great Monday.